Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The winds of the Dakotas have maddened the people of the plains for centuries. They've also inspired the artists who seek such inspiration here. Ted Whippert is the Music Alive composer in residence for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. The orchestra performs Saturday at 7:30 Central Time at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. That program features the premiere of Whippert's composition, Wind of Many Voices. Also on the program, soloist David Kim and Tchaikovsky's Concerto for Violin and Orchestra in D major, Opus 35, and Sibelius's Symphony No. 7 in C major, Opus 105. This morning, Maestro Delta David Geyer and Ted Whippert joined me in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB Sioux Falls Studio to talk about the program, about what inspires a composer, and about how Ted Whippert has forged deep connections with South Dakota and the musical traditions here. Thank you for stopping by today. And how many times have you been, Ted, to South Dakota now? This is not your first visit, by any means.
No, this is probably about my 12th visit.
Yeah. And you've been to all corners of the state. Sisseton, Pine
Correct.
Ridge, Spearfish, Sioux Falls, Rapid City.
Right. Aberdeen.
Aberdeen. And when you do that, you not only have the musical experience that you're going to have, but you have the traveling experience, the meals and the overnights and the early mornings. And how does that sort of fit into sort of becoming closer and becoming family-like with this organization?
Yeah, there's a whole South Dakota feel, you know, that I've assimilated somehow in my year of coming out here every month, traveling all over the state. As you say, eating in different kinds of establishments, but really the landscapes, you know, all the way from the prairies, the agriculture, to the mountains, to the badlands, and the different peoples and cultures, the different kinds of music all over the state. I mean, it's just been an incredible cultural adventure.
And then how has that influenced you, particularly as it relates to the program coming up in your composition?
Right. So this weekend we'll be hearing the premiere of my piece, Wind of Many Voices, which is really a reflection on this whole adventure. And, of course, half of the adventure came after I finished the piece. So now I'm thinking, well, what's the next chapter in my Dakota musical expression? But The title, Wind of Many Voices, was something that I really had a hard time coming up with. I believe more and more in it, but the thing is that there's no way to capture in just a few words what all of this experience is,
right?
But I decided to use the wind as kind of a unifying image, because the wind is everywhere in South Dakota, and obviously there are many voices here.
And tell me how some of those voices gave you direct feedback in this sort of, you know, as you work on the piece, there's an opportunity for people here to tell you, for the musicians themselves to provide input.
Well, there was an extraordinary opportunity back in October when, thanks to the fact that there is this residency with support for everything I'm doing and for bringing the public in on what I'm doing, there was this amazing event where my first sketches for the piece, about 10 minutes worth of music, was read by the orchestra, meaning to say that just lightly rehearsed, you know, just the opportunity to hear how it was fitting together with an invited audience. The feedback of the musicians was absolutely essential. You know, it really changed the techniques I was using and the direction of certain parts of the piece. And the audience feedback as well, really, it is actually what focused me on this image of the wind. The wind was there, but then people saying, oh, that wind sound, it made me think of this, it made me think of that. Then I realized, oh, this is really the element that people are going to connect with.
And did it make them think of their lives here now, or did it remind them of the historic, you know, people who have lived here in the past, their own ancestors? What kind of feedback were they saying?
Yes, yeah, it was ancestral. It was the influence that the wind had on settlers here, and not always a good influence.
Right.
That is, it was, well, obviously a force of nature to be reckoned with.
Delta David Geyer, tell us a little bit more about the residency and how it's impacted, you know, the orchestra and the community as well, if you would.
Well, I think we've made good use of this 2.5 years. The organization New Music USA, formerly Meet the Composer, gave the impetus for this, and they chose five orchestras across the country, us being one of them, Philadelphia, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. So we're in very good company for this cohort their goal was to answer the question, what would it look like to have a composer as part of your staff, of your orchestra? Not just premiering a work, not just being an advocate for new music, but to have them as a part of your orchestra staff. And it's kind of novel. And so we worked dead to the bone, pretty much, you know. It's like the crying uncle now. But we really took that very seriously and documented it very well, I think. Actually, it's a bit of a competition among the cohort. And I think in June, when we go to our League of American Orchestras conference, we're going to take home the banner. we're going to crush the competition. I love the idea of crushing the Philadelphia Orchestra. but this, between the work that he has done as a composer and the work that he's done as a teacher for these composition academies that he's run for us last summer, and the students, high school students, Native American high school students that he was able to impact. It just really just goes really far in terms of the South Dakota Symphony's relevance and what we're trying to accomplish by bringing cultures closer together and helping us to understand one another. Ted, would you say that was part of your experience being in Pine Ridge and Sisseton and these places and working there with these students?
Oh, totally. And getting to work with the students and understand something of their lives and what is in their heads musically, but also what they're going through personally. Because when you compose instrumental music, you can put anything in it. You know, you can be completely honest because nobody needs to know what it means.
That's appealing.
With that. Yeah.
That's very appealing, isn't it, to students in general? It's subversive.
Is.
The opportunity to be subversive if you so choose.
Yes, and to maybe deal with things that you haven't dealt with before.
Yeah.
And then connected with that has been the opportunity to work with some amazing Native American musicians, you know, grown professional musicians, and understand a little bit their art. And then visiting high schools on the reservations and seeing that whole social milieu, that's been a big part of the experience.
So as a composer yourself then, and you've worked, you know, you're interested in Korean traditional music, now you've had an experience with sort of this long, in-depth experience with Lakota music. So I wanted to get at this question of, as you have influences that are outside a cultural experience of your own, how do they influence you as a composer without appropriation?
Right.
That's the standard question.
Right. That is today's version of the question, right? Dealing as a creative artist with influences from other cultures is an enormously stimulating experience, but also something where you want to be really careful, that not in the sense of making mistakes, but in the sense of drawing on the best possible response you can make to that culture, realizing that you're not from that culture. It's not for me to take a Native American tune and set it to music and say, this is the way it should sound. But I respond as a musician and maybe to some degree as an American, knowing the history, knowing that my people were settlers here and had interactions, good or bad, with Native Americans. I respond to their music with great excitement. And it's that excitement of my response that I'm trying to capture in my music rather than the sound of their music itself. But you can see where that's an interesting aesthetic and creative challenge.
Yeah, and this is something you bump up with all the time and have thought very deeply about.
Indeed. Well, Ted, you're sort of a modern-day Dvorak in this sense, you know, or the Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. These people that could be called Indianists. I wouldn't put you in that category necessarily because it's become such a negative connotation.
Right.
It's the whole question of a cultural appropriation versus a cultural misappropriation. you know, the characterizations of, you know, the Atlanta Braves and the Washington Redskins. Sorry, I know you're a fan.
maybe not the name, but the team, yeah.
Well, this is not what you're after. And classical music has hundreds of years worth of this kind of paying respect to other cultures through composers, using music of other cultures within their own music. You think of, you know, Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Español. It's a Russian take on flamenco. You know, it's a wonderful piece of music. Was he disrespecting, you know, the culture of southern Spain by doing so? Of course not. The music, the opera Carmen, again, a flamenco dancer, but a French composer who was totally enamored. Bizet was totally enamored with flamenco and this culture. So this is not misappropriation. This is not using another culture. It's rather paying respect.
And the musical communication between, because it's not one-sided.
Correct.
Either. And that's, I think, an important distinction here. It's not a composer coming and visiting and then leaving and taking. There is a back and forth and a sharing. And those students that you worked with sort of opening. Was there anyone who helped you become a composer, who sort of opened the door for you to say, this is what it means, and that resonated with you to the point where you wanted to take a step through that professional direction? Because you didn't start out, what were you, like, some kind of biochemist? You were a scientist.
Right, I was a biochemistry major in college,
yeah.
And it was during those 4 years that I realized that I really wanted to be a composer without understanding at all what that meant in terms of a life. But among the people who have sort of opened the door and given me permission, one is sitting in this room right now. One is Delta David Geyer, who's given me tremendous opportunities, this one most of all here at South Dakota Symphony. My major teacher was David Del Tredici, who really just opened the creative doors for me, and also the professional doors of expectation, you know, of it's like, no, this is not good enough.
Right.
Right. This is good enough. This is not good enough. So there have been many figures, but also Dvorak, you know, the people of the past who inspire you. And of course, I'm humbled by your mentioning Dvorak in this context, because he's one of my heroes and one of the great composers. But interestingly, he never borrowed a tune from any other culture or even from his own culture. He got the essence of the tunes and created his own thing out of that, which makes it a personal response and not an appropriation.
Well, so much so that other cultures used his music.
That's right.
Like the gospel tune Going Home, which probably pops into anybody's mind when you say that, you know, going home, going home. That's the melody from the second movement of the New World Symphony by Dvorak. It was his tune. And then it was appropriated as a Negro spiritual, you know. So there you have it.
you know, we make a somewhat light of the whole competition. You know, we're going to crush the competition with this, you know, this composer in residence program. But I want to just close with this idea of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra's influence in this cohort, because I think it really can't be stated enough how much is really happening here that is innovative, that is something that other people in other orchestras across the country are inspired by. Do you agree with that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I live in New York. I used to work at Meet the Composer, now New Music USA. I'm currently doing work with the League of American Orchestras, another sponsor of this project. So I sort of know how things are seen nationally.
Right.
And you know, pound for pound, the South Dakota Symphony is really, really knocking it out of the park in terms of innovation and consistency. Like, being committed to something like the Lakota Music Project for over 12 years now. It's like, orchestras don't rack up that kind of consistency. It's really great to be associated with it.
That's true. We were on the Skype yesterday in our board meeting with John Limbacher, who's the CEO of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, another one member of the cohort. But he was saying, telling our board, he said the South Dakota Symphony is a national model for what a symphony orchestra should be to its community. And we're proud of that. We're very intentional about it. That wasn't the goal, so that we can hang a shingle on our door about it. But the fact is that we're doing it for the right reasons, and it's having the impact that it should.
Also on the program, Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, and tell us a little bit about David Kim and the rest of the program.
Oh, please come here, David Kim.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, David, he's been here before. Concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra. I know I talked about crushing the competition, but I love this orchestra. I've conducted it many times. And David is just an absolutely supreme, dynamic performer, interpreter of Tchaikovsky. It's it's going to be a wonderful experience. We're going to rehearse with him for the first time this evening, and I just can't wait.
South Dakota Symphony Orchestra in concert March 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. Delta David Geyer, composer Ted Whippard, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you.